morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of your morning show hosts, and this morning I'm lucky enough to be joined by, my really very favorite co-host, Susie Prez. Hi, Susie.
Hi, good morning, Julie, and good morning, KRFY listeners. Thanks for tuning in this morning on, what is it, Tuesday, May 2nd.
Yeah. One day after May Day, and what a beautiful Tuesday morning it is. We're going to have some weather, but before we hear about it, I'd like to give our listeners a preview of what we can expect this morning. We've got a great interview planned, and this morning we're going to be joined by two experts on native plants. One is Bob Wilson from Cedar Mountain Perennials and also associated with the Plant Society. Hello, Bob.
Good morning.
Nice to have you. And our second guest is John Hastings. He's a co-owner of All Seasons Garden and Floral, and the newest board member for the Native Plant Society. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good. We'll be chatting soon. But Susie, let's first have a weather report.
All right. From the National Weather Service, we have currently 55 degrees out. And dig this, 88 degrees is the high today with sunny. That's all it's saying. There's not a cloud in the sky, but I think there'll be a few clouds. And then tonight we have, and I'll say that again, the high of 88, just so you, in case you didn't hear that. Tonight we have a chance of showers, then slight chance of thunderstorms, and a low of 55. That chance is 30 to 20%. Tomorrow, Wednesday, we have a 20% chance of showers, and then a slight chance of thunderstorms, and a high of 81. And Wednesday night, low of 53, mostly clear. And it looks, we have rain in the forecast, basically.
Good. We could use it. It's warming up, and it's time for a little spring rain.
Yep.
Yeah, that brings us to our guests again. Spring rain brings spring flowers, and some of those flowers are native flowers. And we've got two experts on native plants. They both have their own nurseries that feature native plants, Bob exclusively, and John, I believe you guys have some of each.
Yes.
Yes, but your hats you're wearing for us today are with the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society, and both of you have been very involved with that organization. I'd like you both to start by taking a few minutes and letting the listeners know a little bit about yourself, how you came to be part of the Sandpoint community, and how you got involved with the Native Plant Society. Bob, why don't you start?
Well, good morning, everyone. Good to be here. I've got a long history. It's been a long journey getting here, actually. Been interested in plants all my life. I do have a degree in horticulture from Oregon State. But my wife and I moved here in 2000. We moved here from Flagstaff, and while I was in Flagstaff, I was able to work for a number of years for the Arboretum at Flagstaff, which was a public garden. Then went on to start my own nursery down there, the Sanawa Nursery. For those of you that speak Spanish, you would recognize that means Sanagua means without water. So we were growing very drought-tolerant plants there. When I came up here in 2000, I was fortunate to find an opening with the University of Idaho Extension Service and worked in the Bonner County Art Office as a horticultural specialist covering the four northern counties. So I got a chance to work with nursery growers up north, Christmas tree growers, as well as a number of small farms. And then also was fortunate to be able to be the coordinator for the Master Gardener program for the county. So that was a lot of fun also.
What a resume. Wow.
So, so that's what brought us to Sandpoint. And then my wife and I started our nursery, Cedar Mountain Perennials, in 2010.
Okay, great. Well, and then how did you become involved with the Native Plant Society?
I've been interested in the native plants everywhere I've gone. Went to school in California, Oregon first, and then California. And always took an interest in whatever was growing there in the wild. And always been attracted to the wildflowers specifically. Then we moved to Arizona. A little bit in Northeast Oregon, in Hermiston, and then Arizona, and each place I could kind of hook up with the whatever Native Plant Society groups were present there, and then finally came up to Idaho, and we had the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society, which actually When I first got on the board, it was at Kinnikinick chapter of the Idaho Native Plant Society, and my first the first introduction on the board was kind of an eye-opener. They were all ready to go rogue and form their own organization, the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society, which has subsequently been quite successful in a number of areas.
All right, a little history. Well, that's great. What a great background. John, that's a hard act to follow, but do your best.
All right. Well, my wife and I moved here about 30 years ago, and shortly after that, we purchased All Seasons Garden Center. At the time, it had a different name. We changed it to that because my little bit of marketing background told me, you can tell this is a long time ago, you want to start with A, so you're first in the yellow pages. We have some people out there that remember the yellow pages, I'm hoping. But and at any rate, I had we'd moved here from Minnesota. When people say, why did you come here? We say, for the warm tropical climate.
Yes. And, I agree.
And that was a big part of it compared to where we came from. And I had worked in a number of jobs, more of an educator, worked for the National Park Service as a naturalist, worked for some private lodges as a naturalist. That's kind of some of my acquaintance with the native plant side of things. I taught horticulture, dual credit for the U of I, advanced placement environmental science and forestry also. So that's some of my background in that. And then when we moved out here, I had those kinds of opportunities for me, and we were just looking for an opportunity for Nancy to get involved with, and that's when the nursery that we own now was closed at the time, but so we reopened it and have expanded greatly from what it was from when we purchased the place.
So. Yes, so a great background in plants and native plants. And how did you find the Native Plant Society?
They found me. And that was just because I owned All Seasons Garden Center. They came in, and I think before I was a member of the Native Plant Society, I had been a speaker at about four times. I've been a speaker at their monthly meetings, and so that's how I became acquainted through the society, was being asked to be a speaker there and talk about certain items.
All right. Well, we've gotten a great background from both of you. Boy, we have some very knowledgeable guests this morning, so let's launch in. I'd like to hear just what is the Native Plant Society about, the history, mission, what are your goals?
Well, and as the newest board member, I might not address that quite as well as Bob can here in a moment, but you would have to mention the name Lois Wythe if you're going to be involved in this Native Plant Society. She was the founding force behind it. And the arboretum that the Native Plant Society still maintains at Lakeview Park is honored with her name associated with it, because she was one of the founding members of the society. And it just arose from people who were interested in native plants. I think even long before, the more that we've learned about native plants and what it is that they're capable of doing for ecosystems. And it's not just we like the way they flower, or we like the fact that they can handle our local conditions better. It's really that they are a necessary element if you're going to have a landscape that supports not just what you plant in it, but all the other animals that are dependent upon that sort of food source.
Well, I have two questions. First one, I just wanted to go back and talk about Lois. Could you just give us a reason why she is the person whose name is on the arboretum? I know she played a vital role in developing stuff in our community around plants.
Lois was the inspiration behind first of all, the Kinnikinick, was the Kinnikinick chapter of the Idaho Native Plant Society. She called a meeting and asked some of her friends to join her, and they were going to talk about starting this organization here in Sandpoint. And much to her surprise, about 50 people showed up, and the Kinnikinick chapter was born. So she's really the whole reason this whole business exists. But it was also her inspiration, her vision, to have a place where native plants could go on display, and that's what led to the formation of the North Idaho Arboretum, North Idaho Native Plant Arboretum, they were able to find a nice location and partnered with the city And it does exist in a city park, Lakeview Park, which is over there by Memorial Field and right next to the Bonner County Historical Museum. So she's that's really the reason she's honored here at our native plant garden.
Right, and this native plant garden over there by the museum at Lakeview Park, what is that like? Is it a kind of thing that you can walk through and it tells you things, you get educated? Does it have that component to it, hands-on kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. There's one of the first things you'll run into is a big billboard. Once you get out of the parking lot, there's a big billboard with a map. And what they've tried to do there is create a variety of different maps, a variety of different naturally occurring habitats. So there's your high mountain habitat, your forested habitats, your wet ground habitats, and plant in each of those the kinds of plants that would normally grow in those habitats. So it's a learning experience about what does grow and the diversity of plants that we do have in our area.
Well, that leads into continuing questions about what is the Plant Society all about, and it sounds like education is one of those items on your mission statement.
Yeah.
There are a number of committees within the Native Plant Society. One of them is called the Landscape Committee, and they will pick somebody's home to come out and provide like a free consultation of what they might do to make their landscape around their home more native plant friendly and therefore more native flora and fauna friendly. They do field trips where they'll have, that's another committee, field trip committee, and they take people out and do identification of native plants. One thing, too, when Bob was talking about walking around the Arboretum at Lakeview Park, is that there's little signage that identifies plants for you if you are interested in doing that. When I used to use that Arboretum as a teaching site, I would have to go around and put little bags over all those identification signs so that my students wouldn't cheat, you know, so that they would have to figure them out without having the helps there. But there are helps there if you want to just learn about the plants and what they are. And there's also some nice posters throughout the place that provide additional information about what's kind of going on there in that demonstration garden.
Yeah. And I should mention that it is in the city park, so it is open 24 hours a day. And it's just open. There's paths you can walk through to do anytime you want to go. But the Arboretum, maintenance of the Arboretum is one of the big efforts, volunteer efforts that we participate in to just with all the watering and weeding and so forth that takes and new plantings as well. And that's one of the major emphases of the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society.
All right. And John?
Well, and the other thing that came to mind there, too, is that one of the other major things that the probably the one that has the most community involvement is our monthly programs. And last month in April was a speaker who was talking about native bees, and she's going to be back on May 20th. That's at the Bonner County Library, and she'll be doing a follow-up, also continuing to talk about if you want to try and raise bees, if you want to. And we're talking native bees here, not the honeybees sorts of things. And that is definitely a thing that the general community is incredibly aware of, is that there's problems with pollinators, in particular bees, and what are the things that we can do to help them out. And she's a really knowledgeable person who will be telling us a lot more about what to do if we want to try and help the bees.
Well, that leads into my other thought, is why are native pollinators so important to everything, basically?
Yes, and the plants that, and how do native plants impact our native pollinators?
Yeah, so the importance of pollinators in general, native ones for here, and then the native plants that support them.
Well, I think they're both two sides of, they're two critical pieces of our native ecosystems, and one can't survive without the other. So, That's why they're so important. But I mean, when we look at native ecosystems, it's not just the the plants and the flowers and the trees and the wildlife, but it really extends like down into the soil, all the soil microorganisms, the fungi and bacteria that live there that we're learning more and more about every day, although I think we're still just starting to scratch the surface on that field of science. There's a whole web of interconnected organisms in the wild, and some of them visible and some of them not. The native plants are really just a key piece of that, and they all support each other.
And the timing is important for our native pollinators and our native plants, right? That makes a huge difference.
And another thing, too, is that sometimes the difference between native plants and either non-native or selected cultivars, the leaf chemistry, the flower chemistry, can be slightly different. And so even if the pollinators are attracted to them and they're getting pollen from them, it might be like you eating junk food versus eating good food. Will you stay alive? Yes. Will you be not as healthy as you would have been otherwise? Also yes. So there is a different chemistry associated with the pollens and everything associated with those native plants that helps. And, you know, when we think of, oh, good, it's good for the bees, and that then we go and spray our gardens to get rid of other pests that we don't want, sometimes thinking that these things are selective and they'll kill the things we don't want and they'll leave the things alone that we do want, and it doesn't work that way. It pretty much either kills everything or nothing. And there's other things that are pollinating too, and besides the bees, and we like some of those bugs around, and some of them we don't, like people who say, I love to watch the butterflies, but I spray to kill the caterpillars. Well, you're not going to get the butterflies without the caterpillars. And then the thing is those caterpillars and butterflies are going to attract the birds. And so if you like to watch birds, you want a rich, diverse ecosystem functioning in your landscape so that it will attract all those kinds of things that you do want to see. And those critters fly out into the more natural areas, and they become a part of a larger ecosystem that is just more, it's more enhanced, it's more supportive if there's native plants in your landscape.
Oh, that's a beautiful picture. I have seen writings about don't take away your dandelions. It's the first food for the pollinators. And I do that. My neighbors aren't happy about it, but I think that the pollinators are important. I want to get back to that because they have the name pollinators. They move the stuff around. Would we have apples if we didn't have pollinators pollinating the blossoms?
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah. They really have to have some pollinator, and typically the honeybees are, which are not native here, are used for that. But I might just digress here on the dandelions. Everything I have read says that yes, they produce nectar, and plant and bees do come to the nectar. But as John pointed out, that nectar is not as complete a food as some of the native wildflower nectars.
St. John's wort or something like that. So,
well, that's not native either.
No, that's not native.
No way.
And as long as we're telling stories, yeah. I used to teach at an advanced placement environmental science, and I had a parent of a former student call me up once and said, Hastings, what can I do to kill the dandelions in my yard? Because since my daughter had your class, she won't let me spray. So you got to give me another choice.
Mow them.
Yes, if your neighbors that, well, I like it. My lawn is diverse. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I look at other lawns, I see grass, which is not that's a very high maintenance plant, quite honestly. And my lawn, yes, I have some grass, but I also have dandelions and I have plantain and I have I probably have 20 different species, and I do mow it, you know, and it kind of looks like a yard, but it certainly doesn't look like a golf course. It's not manicured like a golf course. And if the neighbors get really upset about the dandelion heads, I try not to let them go to seed, mm-hmm. as a favor to my neighbors. So I'll mow them. I'll mow the after they've been there for a while. And when I see other plants starting to come and blossom, so that I know there's some other food sources out there. I have a lot of fruit trees on the property. And when they start to blossom, then I know that there's some other food sources for them.
Yes, and hopefully bag them.
Also, interestingly enough, you know, when we talk about, well, we haven't talked about invasive species, but looking at that dandelions, which in Europe are grown as a food crop, and that's why they first came to this country. They are intentionally imported as a food crop. And they are a delicious green for you to eat when they're young, But if you've ever used any kind of chemicals on your yard, I would not eat those dandelion greens.
Right.
John, Bob, you look like you might have something you wanted to add.
The importance of pollinators and how we can support them to thrive.
I don't know if I did.
Okay, no problem, no problem. Well, have we covered all of the events and activities happening with the Native Plant Society?
Well, if I could add one more on that, though. The Native Plant Society, a number of years ago, produced a book. It's called Landscaping with Native Plants in the Idaho Panhandle. And it's focuses on plants specifically native to Bonner and Boundary counties. But unlike a field guide, which just looks at helps with identification, this gives you a lot of information on how to grow the plants, what kind of garden conditions they need, and will help you bring native plants into your own landscapes.
And that book, at the monthly meetings, that book is available. I think most of the bookstores and most of the garden centers around town also have that book available. Yeah. If you're interested.
And we'll have it at the plant sale.
And what's the name of that book again?
It's Landscaping with Native Plants in the Idaho Panhandle.
Okay.
All right. Well, oh.
And I'll mention one other thing, too, just along that, is that, I don't know, how this is maybe 15 years ago, behind what was then the federal building, but is now the county building, my students through Sandpoint High School planted a demonstration native plant garden there. And it's intentionally the size of what your front yard might be, so that if somebody wanted to come and look at things and get some ideas, you know, it's a large landscape, which won't work for everybody. But it's one of the things that I think is interesting. When we planted that, we planted about 54 different species in like what might be your front yard size thing. So that's fairly diverse. When we've gone back to inventory that, there's been about 10 species that are no longer there. And there's about an equal number of species that we didn't plant that are there. And so by having that diverse community, it's kind of going through a natural succession process. And it's another place to come and look and get some ideas about how native plants might work for you.
And we'll go to break shortly, a song break. But before we get there, I wanted to ask you two things about the Sandpoint Library. First of all, the meetings are held. Your meetings are held there monthly. One can go in person or Zoom, correct?
I believe so.
Yes, at this time. Yeah. Zoom is continuing. You know, for a while there, it was just Zoom. But there's all, I mean, at a typical meeting, there might be 40, I'm guessing just a rough number, 40 or 50 people there. And there's probably about a dozen or so people on Zoom also watching it.
Yeah, really. And they're great programs. I've listened to a lot of them. And then last question before we take a little song break. Is the pollinator garden at the library something you've been involved with? Is that a... Not you guys.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
And George Gehrig, he was pretty heavily involved at that, and he's also a board member of the Native Plant Society.
But another opportunity to learn about pollinators.
And a note of caution that a pollinator garden has become the favorite sleeping place of a very large moose.
Oh!
So if you go there, do check to see if the moose is around, and then don't enter if he is.
And that's at the library you're talking about? Yeah,
at the
hanging
library.
Well, it's my neighborhood, so I'll definitely take a look. This is 88.5 KRFY. We're going to take a little song break. We're speaking with folks from the Kinnickinnic Native Plant Society, Bob Wilson and John Hastings. We'll be right back with more information. I just want to put out there really quickly, I love the educational and inspirational aspect of the work that you're doing through the Kinnickinnic Native Plant Society. So we're going to take a break. We're going to play Casey Musgraves' Butterflies, seems appropriate. And here we go. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is 88.5 KRFY. And that was Casey Musgraves' Butterflies.
And good morning, listeners. If you're just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie Calamine, Tuesday morning show host, and I'm here today, so happy to be here with Susie Prez, my co-host. And Susie, I have to mention that I don't think we identified this morning's show as Garden Life, which it really is.
That's right.
It's a Tuesday morning show, happens once per month. Normally, Julie Purchinski would be here co-hosting with me, but she's out of town helping her mom.
If she's in Nebraska listening, and you can listen to KRFY streaming anytime you want, anywhere in the world. And so, Julie, if you're out there, hi.
Yes, hi, Julie. We miss you. Anyway, back to Kinnikinick Native Plant Society with John Hastings and Bob Wilson, two true experts about native plants. And there are still more things happening with the Native Plant Society, and you have one you'd like to tell us about.
Yeah, we do have, every year we put on a Native Plant Sale, and this will be taking place this year. It's always the first Saturday in June, so June 3rd. And it's over at Lakeview Park, right next to the Native Plant Arboretum and right in front of the Bonner County Historical Museum. We're putting on a plant sale. I'll give you a few details, but there's also a lot of other activities going on there that you might want to participate in. The museum is having a first free Saturday, so admission to the museum that day is free from 10 till 4. And the city of Sandpoint is having their Arbor Day celebration, and that starts at 10 a.m. I'm not sure how long it goes exactly, but they'll have a tree planting and a proclamation by the mayor and some other educational information there. And then also with our Native Plant Society sale, we're going to be joined by the Bonner County Gardeners Association. They're going to have a table that's with information to promote butterflies and gardening for butterflies with your native plants. And they're hoping to have some milkweed seeds to distribute as well. So there's a lot of things to bring people in. I might mention, if you're interested in a rummage sale, the Hearts Over Sandpoint is having the rummage sale at the Lions Club that same day. So a lot going on around us. But to get back to our event, we'll be offering for sale a large variety of native plants. These are coming from mostly from my own nursery. But we'll have a variety of native wildflowers and a few shrubs, a few trees, and things like that. But this is a fundraiser, so we donate a significant portion of the proceeds to the Native Plant Society. So it's a fundraiser for them. And in addition to the plants, there's a bake sale. Some of our Native Plant Society folks are having a making some baked goodies for everyone, and that's for donation. There'll be some coffee and tea available, and maybe some garden crafts. That's still in the works. That hasn't been pinned down. We usually try to offer something else to go in your garden besides just the plants. And then, like I mentioned, we'll also have our landscaping book, Landscaping with Native Plants in the Idaho Panhandle. So it's a full day.
That sounds really exciting, and that is June 3rd at Lakeview Park or at the Arboretum right by the...
Yeah, and that starts at 9.
It starts at 9 o'clock. Yeah. Lots of plants for sale to help support the work of the Kinnikinick Native Plant Society. I have one question, and maybe there's a better time to ask, but I've been interested in native plants for about 5 years, and I put a bunch of pistamens in my garden, and they have lived. But is there easy ones to do? Is it easy to have these in your garden because they're native? Does it make them easier to keep alive through the years? And do they do you have a favorite?
To answer the question about easier or not easier, it depends is probably the best answer. Some of them are what we would, bomb-proof is a word I use, in that they're very easy to get established and maintain. Others are not. One of the things that sometimes people don't appreciate, perhaps, some native plants and even just perennials in general, is they tend to have a shorter bloom period than some of the other things they might be accustomed to. Some native plants and well, and non-natives as well, they choose not to try and deal with a hot, dry summer, and so they go dormant. And that's another thing that some people might not appreciate in their landscape if that happens. So that's just making an intelligence choice. One of the things that I like to always say to people when they're looking at using native plants is Doug Tallamy, who kind of has written several books on the topic and is kind of the guru of landscaping with natives, if you will. He has said that if 70% of the plants you put in your landscape are native, it will function as a native ecosystem. So you don't have to think, I have to be a purist and I have to go 100%. You can mix in a few other things as well and still have a native landscape that functions as a native landscape.
Great response to that question. And I would add in that not every native plant can live just anywhere. That's why the arboretum has various environmental places. So one has to pay attention. And with that, I'll add a question. At the plant sale on June 3rd, will there be folks that can help people who are purchasing the plants understand where they might be happiest?
Yeah, I have a good crew of folks. Both my wife and myself will be there, and Gail Bolin will be there. Molly O'Reilly often helps with that as well. So we have some people that are very knowledgeable with the native plants. And so you can just come and say, well, I have a shady spot or a hot, dry spot, and then we can direct you to which plants are most suitable for those locations. But that's really the secret to success with native plants, is matching the plant needs with your garden conditions. So if it's a sunny spot, certain plants will do well. If it's a shady spot, other plants would, you'd choose other plants. So you try to match that, and that's really the key to success.
One thing I'd add too there is that this is radio, so I can't show you pictures. I wish I could, but there's a picture that I often show when I'm talking about this thing, and it shows about 30 different plants, and off on one side of it is Kentucky bluegrass, and the root system of Kentucky bluegrass goes about 3 to 4 inches into the ground. And when you look at a lot of these native plants, they will have root systems that go 25 feet into the ground. The notion of being a drought-tolerant plant is kind of a misnomer. It's not that they're drought-tolerant. It's that they know where the water is, and the water is 20 feet down. And so they're capable of and many of them, most of them probably have root zones of 6 to 10 feet. But some of them will, like I said, they'll be 20, 25 feet in the ground. So it's not that they're getting by without water. They know where the water is, and so they go find it.
A healthy root system in your yard also, just there's a whole life underneath the soil that is probably supported by a healthy root system.
Well, and as Bob was saying earlier about what we're learning about mycorrhizae, the fungal associations between plants, it's truly mind-boggling to me that plants are capable of communicating chemically with one another through those mycorrhizae, through their root systems and such. They're even capable of identifying, not all, but some plants are capable of identifying seedlings that came from their seed. And they're able to transfer nutrients through the mycorrhizal associations that they have. So we've never thought of plants as caregivers, but some truly are.
Well, this is such interesting information, and it just makes me want to have more native plants in my yard. Let's talk a bit more about the Native Plant Society. Why would listeners who aren't yet a member want to become one? What are some of the benefits of membership?
If you're interested in lifelong learning, and this is a topic that, of course, as we see climate transitions that are happening and that native plants might be better adapted to some of those changes that we see, and it's just an excellent organization to get involved with, and you will learn a lot by it. And even by attending those meetings or becoming a member, you will learn a whole lot about our local ecosystems and things you can be doing to make them more resilient and more functioning.
Sure. And at the monthly meetings, is there shared information beyond just the presentation? How does it work with your community of folks who love native plants? Is there a lot of helpful information?
Well, there is some information, but an important part of this is that they often open up the doors maybe a half an hour before the presentation, And it's kind of a social time for the group, and it's a good chance to meet other members of the organization and listen to what they're doing and learn from them as well. And,
make new friends.
And there's always coffee and a wealth of cookies, I might add, as additional motivation. Cookies always motivate me, this I know.
Oh, it's good to know, John.
So I have to just tell a short story about the Native Plant Society meetings. I've been attending them on and off for a number of years, and I think we all miss him, Sprouts. Remember? He hardly ever missed a meeting due to the coffee. I think the information, the coffee, and the cookies.
And he was usually... He was usually a contributor to the two, depending upon the season. He'd have a 5-gallon bucket of plums or apples or whatever he was harvesting around town. I mean, these are not necessarily coming off his trees. He would find trees that were kind of neglected around town.
Yeah.
He would harvest and
Sure miss that guy.
Share the
nice
wealth.
Guy. Yeah. Well, as we're coming to an end, let's talk about how a listener who isn't yet a member might become one. Would the plant sale be a good place to start?
Absolutely. We will have membership forms there, and of course, quite a number of members of the organization will be there, and you can chat with them and learn more about what they're doing. But yeah, we'll have membership forms that you can fill out and get signed up, and we'd love to have you. And I'm you know, this is a pretty extensive group within our community. There are over 100 members in the Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society right now. So it's a very active group.
It is one of the most active chapters of a Native Plant Society in Idaho, even though we're no longer affiliated with the state chapter. But it's a very active chapter of the Native Plant Societies.
So, okay, great. No, I'm going to go back to education and inspiration. And John, you had one more thing you wanted to say.
And that was back to the membership thing, is that if you do a simple search for Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society, you'll find our website, and then the opportunity to join is online there, too.
I challenge listeners to spell that the first time, though. It's not the easiest.
And here's another a fun fact. If you drop the C at the end of Kinnikinnick, which often is spelled, it sometimes is spelled that way as well, then you have the world's, I'm told, I haven't verified, the world's longest palindrome, because it's the same forward and back. If you drop that C.
Well, there's a little fact for you, folks.
Yeah, also, if you want to find them online, it's nativeplantsociety.org.
Oh, you made it easier for us all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you don't have to remember the word Kinnikinnick.
Oh, good. Well, we are coming to an end of our program, and I think Susie has another comment. But before we get to that, any really fun stories you might like to share about your time with the Native Plant Society? I know there are lots of shared field trips and time together. Anything that would have our morning end with on a happy note?
For me, I know that the most rewarding times have been through, we haven't mentioned this, but there is an annual grant program if you're looking through the Native Plant Society, if you're looking at adding some native plants to your landscape. And one of the things they always reached out to was schools. And I know that some of the most rewarding experiences I've had through the Native Plant Society is when we've used those grants to, we planted a pollinator garden at Round Lake. We did a pollinator garden on the campus of Sandpoint High School. I know that, that's just rewarding to see the students that are doing that they know they actually made a difference. We did major restoration projects out at the Pack River Delta and, we're a significant portion of the restoration projects at the Clark Fork Delta. So to get students involved in native, that's what I always like to do. They're hand in the dirt, get the work done. Let's not learn about it. Let's go do it. And those were some of the most rewarding experiences, certainly seeing the motivation from students as they get excited to do the work.
Yeah. I think for me, one of the things I enjoy the most right now is the interaction with people that are looking to improve their own landscapes and helping them and giving them solutions, suggestions for things that they could grow there. And then hearing back later that everything they planted is doing great, or maybe not everything, but hearing a lot of success that people are having with native plants, I find that very rewarding.
Yes, how exciting when they get established and start taking care of themselves and seeing them thrive. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only thing else I wanted to say was this is very inspirational, and I can't wait to get out in my garden and see how the pestamens are doing. So thank you, both of you, the Doug Tellemays of Sandpoint, Idaho.
Yes. So
I have read his book, too. So
wonderful. Well, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this morning. We've been joined by Bob Wilson, who's the owner of Cedar Mountain Perennials in Athol, and John Hastings, recently retired as a high school teacher, much beloved, and now, and as always, co-owner of All Seasons Garden and Floral, and both very active members of the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society. I want to thank you both for joining us this morning. I've learned a ton.
Me too.
Yes.
And I'm inspired.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you.
All right, well, on to a song break, and then Susie and I may be back with a little bit of info about what's going on around town and at KRFY.
Yep, that's right. We have the reader board to read to you. So right now we're going to hear the Beatles, Here Comes the Sun, because Here Comes the Sun today, a high of 88. Oh, my goodness. And we'll be right back.